Welcome to episode 17 of the Golf Betting System podcast. We're talking this week the Mexico Championship, which is the first World Golf Championship of 2018. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me is our European Tour, or should I say World Golf Championship expert this week. It's Paul Williams. How are you, Paul?
I'm very well, Steve. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good.
Basking in the glory.
Yeah, congratulations on Justin Thomas pick last week.
What about Crocker shit? What happened to him? I'm jumping the gun.
Knock a man when he's down.
Yeah, I know. We also have resident guest Barry O'Hanlon. I'm wondering, Barry, when you don't become a guest, when do you just become resident?
I'm not sure, actually.
Now you're a resident guest. Yes, resident guest.
I'm happy with that status. It's better than resident non-guest.
Yeah. Well, a bit of housekeeping. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. Just search golf betting or golf betting tips in a search engine of your choice. You'll find us. Twitter handles. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. I always mention this. Positive iTunes reviews, brilliant. Likes, comments on Podbean, all much appreciated. We're getting more and more of them, and they are sending a very positive message to the powers that be that the podcast is growing in strength, which it is. Excellent listener numbers and download numbers again for last week. Now, it's World Golf Championship time, where the two tours merge, PGA Tour and European Tour. Pretty much the best players from both are playing this week in Mexico. Now, as it works on golf betting system, Paul tends to do the World Golf Championship events. So you do the Mexico Championship, don't you, Paul? You also do the WGC Bridgestone, the match play, and you also do the HSBC.
That's right. Yeah, so we've got the we're 3 weeks away from the match play, which is the next one after this. But the first one of the season. So it comes around quite quickly, actually, after the start of the year. But
Paul's been a little bit stitched up this week, because normally at this juncture, you can often get three tournaments. One purely on the European Tour. I know it's complicated. One purely on the PGA Tour, and this merged WGC event. As it happens, the Puerto Rico Open has been cancelled this year. Hurricane Katrina and all that business. They're running some kind of pro-am thing that's got a very poor field, but it isn't an official PGA Tour event. But Paul is also pulling together a preview, which I will link to under the description on Podbean, and of course, golfbettingsystem.co.uk, for the Tshwane Open. And I know that we're not going to talk about it tonight, but Paul has a nice inroad onto the Tshwane. You've done quite well on that in the past, haven't you? So we're going to put... Paul's pulling a full preview together for that on the European Tour. But on this particular podcast, we are focusing 100% on the 2018 WGC Mexico Championship. Do you want to take us... Well, in fact, before we talk about that, any learnings from last week? I'll start on this one this week. Learnings from last week. I need to just be relative and realistic here. For me at the moment, Justin Thomas, I've got him, and he mentioned it on his in his interview yesterday after the event, he is gunning for world number one. And I think when he's in form, he was so calm yesterday. The way that he closed that event, I thought it was very, very, very impressive. I mean, Luke List gave him a handful. Alex Noren played some great golf. Tommy was right up there as well. But just the way he closed that back nine, no bogeys, just the two birdies. The pressure on that wedge shot on 18 was unbelievable. But to pull that off was the mark of a quality player for me. A player that I think's got some, you know, you can just see he's got so much fight and desire in there to win tournaments. It's unbelievable. And I saw a stat today that said for his age, there's only him, Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods that have won 8 PGA Tour titles beneath the, I think it was under 23 years of age.
Yeah, he's prolific, isn't he? I remember going back a couple of years ago when you backed him the first time. I forget, was it the Travellers you backed him? And he was,
no, I think the first time I ever tipped him up was like the old Humana Challenge.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and he was, you do remember, he was leading and then I think he hit it in the water on 17.
But yeah,
even,
yeah.
back then you could see you were dealing with something that was abnormal, if you like. Someone that was clearly a really big, big talent.
Yeah, I remember him going for the green. I think he was in the bunker on the 17th and going for the going for the green to try and win the tournament and banging it in the water and then chipped out on a couple of chips, a couple of putts, and ended up missing out on a place, I think. So I remember the conversation with you and I afterwards where you were fuming.
Oh, mate, I was seething. It was a normal Monday morning, seething.
But you didn't even get... But, you know, sometimes you look at that and go, well, at least the guy had the, you know, had the balls to go for that shot to try and win the tournament. And he's a prolific machine now, isn't he? He's turning out win after win after win. So...
the other learning I took from yesterday is I think Luke List is progressing. I think the way that he played and showed some real mental bottle yesterday, I think that's one for the sort of back of the brain mental note. That I think if there's a course that suits List, I think he's progressing slowly towards being able to actually get that first victory.
Yeah.
Whether it'll be an acceptable price when he wins, you don't know, do you? What about you guys in terms of, you know, what did you note yesterday from your golf viewing, Barry? What did you note in Kartarpur? I'm sure you're going to talk about Mr. Crocker.
Do you want to go first, Barry?
Yeah, no, I actually sat down and watched the final round last night, which is nice always to do on a Sunday evening. They don't always live up to expectations, but the back nine between Thomas and List was just... super impressive. The shots they were stuffing in one after the other, like on a really difficult golf course where most of the other guys were playing extremely safe, and these two were just going for it and pulling it off as well. Really impressive from both of them.
That course was a brute, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And
firm fairways, deep rough, and fast greens. It was proper US Open kind of course.
Yeah, it was a wonderful test of golf. A little bit unfortunate that the greens were kind of not in the best of shape. I think they're relaying them next year, I heard. But you know, everybody has to play on the same golf course, so you know, you can complain all you like, but you just got to get knuckle down and get on with it. And you know, the two boys put on a really great show, and Thomas just again showing his class. He's I just can't see a ceiling for him at this stage.
I'm with you.
It's wonderful to watch. And
I know it's easy to get excited when you've got this kind of stuff in your memory bank from 12 hours ago, but I can see him being absolutely perfect for Augusta. You know, the power, the accuracy. I think he's something like fourth or fifth for proximity to hole on the PGA Tour at the moment. The way that the bogeys are starting to become under control. You know, he's got the high ball flight, varied ball flight. If he can get hot on the greens this year.
Just to nitpick a tiny bit, his default with it off the tee seems to be a fade. And we all
so was Sergio's.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm
Justin Rose's. This is the point, isn't it? I think this thing about the draw, and Paul and I, we were always hooked on it, Barry. Absolutely hooked. Oh, it needs to be, you need to draw the ball, Augusta. But in recent years, you know, faders are just as prolific at the moment.
Well, I mean, it seems like they're maybe just flying it over those corners. You know, they're hitting it far. I don't think there's a tournament you can't fancy or have or make a case for Thomas being able to win at this stage. He just seems to show up sets of skills that match up to any test that's thrown at him these days.
I'll ask you both of you the question before we move on to Kartarpur. In terms of where the two players are at the moment, and I know that they're very close in the world rankings, and I'm sure listeners will be interested in your opinion. If you were to compare Spieth and Thomas right here, right now, you know, who for you has got the better chance of contending in majors this year? And who are you, of the two at the moment, who are you most impressed with?
well, Spieth's got such a fantastic record at Augusta, then, you know, it's tough to look past him, but he's not quite right, is he? His putting's still not quite right. Thomas, after yesterday, you're looking at the US Open, or any future US Open, you're thinking, what is a potential contender there? He's got. I think they've both got more majors in them, so that's an interesting question.
I mean, they're both super talented, and Spieth has time and again shown his ability to, even when he's not at the top of his game, to get himself in the right positions in the big events. So I think it's a, you know, that 1-2% on a given week. If one of them can just peak that tiny bit better than the other, they can they could both go on and win a major or two this year. Very possible.
Oh yeah, yeah. As we always say, you just want to see the best players. I mean, we've always said this: if you can get three or four of the best players in the world playing at their peak at Augusta this year, it's going to be absolutely fabulous to watch.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
I think that's all we want, really, isn't it, as golf fans and punters to a certain extent. Okay, Qatar Masters quickly, Paul.
Yeah, just going back quickly to the Honda. I'm sure you guys noticed Sam Burns. He was playing alongside Tiger Woods, and he looks like a talent for the future. I know there was a thread on our Facebook group last week and asking whether, you know, which of the players that you could see up and coming and you know, being, you know, one of these next big players of the future, and you know, to do what he did yesterday, I thought was pretty impressive. Norrin and Fleetwood as well. Again, you know, those guys are really starting to contend in big PGA Tour events, not just European Tour, but, you know, Norrin could have won one already back at Torrey Pines, and again, he was right in the mix again yesterday. And Fleetwood, after, well, it wasn't as much a rocky start last week, but or the week before, but you know, again last week he was in the lead at one point, wasn't he?
So, I think I made a miscalculation with Riviera, and Barry did mention it at the time. That place really is, you've got to have an appearance around there. Really, it's so tricky, Riviera. Honda wasn't the case. I will say with Fleetwood as well, he's playing now. He's playing five straight, so he's already played two. He's playing Mexico, he's playing Fowlspar, and he's playing Bay Hill.
Right, okay.
So he really is deep into the PGA Tour this year.
And then presumably the match play as well after that.
Yeah, six straight, yeah, of course, yeah. Six straight, yeah. Mm. What about Qatar?
Yeah, Qatar, it was quite promising up until close to the... After the third day, we got Wood, we got Larrafabel, we've got Sean Crocker going out, two off the lead. So you'd have hoped that one or more of those would seriously contend and get a place or two. And in the end, it was Larrafabel who came through, and he finished in a tie for fourth, I think it was, in the end. So he got a full each-way payout and the seven places from Coral. But yeah, Crocker was a bit disappointed. I think the learning I'll take from that, and something he said in an interview, was that he hasn't had a great deal of experience on more grainy greens. And you've got to bear in mind, he's a young lad. He hasn't had as much experience on Bermuda full stop as some of the other players, and you know, one for the memory banks when he's next on a bent or bent power type surface, and it seems to suit, then that's perhaps the way to back him. But you know, he's had so few starts up until now that it's difficult to assess exactly where his game is. But you start to learn these little bits about these players as they get into contention and get some. Get some airtime on the TV as well.
Is that,
you were both on Larrazabal, weren't you?
Yeah, we were. Yeah, Barry mentioned him in the podcast last week as well, didn't you, Barry?
Yeah, foolishly backed him on the win-only market on Betfair to get better odds.
Oh, no.
And yeah, he just never got quite close enough for it to work out. So yeah, ditching that strategy in the going forward. Come here, just back to Crocker quickly. Is that not a little bit of a convenient excuse and kind of dodging the real truth that he went 67, 68, 67 in great position to go and try get a win on Sunday and shoot 76? Is that not...
Well,
is he not saying... Is he not talking about the greens and maybe deflecting from the fact that the pressure might have got to him, which seems to be the truth there?
Probably. The comment on the greens was actually from earlier in the week from him, and he got himself into position after kind of that concession himself. So, yeah, but then when the pressure's on, you know, one of the things that you might struggle with is your putting potentially, and if your things aren't quite right, either mentally or, you know, you're not quite comfortable for whatever reason, then it can affect you.
Yeah.
Clearly, he's still learning his game, and you know, it didn't quite work out. But he should be better for the experience. And I said the same thing about Southgate the week before. But both of them can potentially kick on from that. It wouldn't put me off backing them again when I think the time's right for in the future. But you know, from both of their perspective, it's disappointing when they're in a truly contending position going into the final day and don't even place. It's a frustration of this game, as you know.
Yeah, he does have a very good aggressive win or bust style, which should hopefully, if you can catch him on nice odds, grab a, you know, get a win and have him backed when he goes after it and gets it.
Yeah, very long as well, and we saw more of him on TV last week than we had done previously. Well, at least more than I'd seen him previously, and you know, he's long. He was hitting fairways as well for the most part, and you know, he's one of these new, as you say, aggressive type players who's he's got a win in him. I'm sure he has. We just need to marry up the right week, I think.
Could be. It's going to be. Yeah, he's just power packed, isn't he? You can just see that, and you get the feeling with a lot of these young Americans that hit the European Tour, because they play such competitive golf in the States, they learn very quickly.
Yeah.
On a tour which, with the best respect in the world, isn't the PGA Tour. There's levels within levels on the European Tour, and you know, if you've got the talent, and I don't think the courses are overly difficult, a lot of them, you can get to learn them quickly. Yeah. I think there's wins, you know, for players of the ilk of Crocker.
A bit further down the line, you know, you look at some of the courses at the back end of the year, the ones like the one at the Czech Republic, that kind of track should suit him down to the ground. So, you know, we might have to just keep a powder dry a little bit on him for the time being. But he's got a win in him, the boy.
Julian Suri being another one. Clearly, he won quite quickly last year on the European Tour, and he's back there now because he didn't get enough money or places at the PGA Tour, the events he did on the West Coast. Okay, right. WGC Mexico Championship played at Club de Golf. How do you pronounce this?
Chapultepec. Chapultepec. Yeah. I suppose now, it's slightly different than that in the local lingo, but close enough.
For listeners of a older ilk who followed golf for a while, this is clearly the old WGC Cadillac Championship that they used to play at Doral, and for whatever reason it got moved. I think that's here for 3 years minimum, isn't it, in Mexico?
I think the original deal was for 7 years, so we'll see how, if that is maintained all the way through it. So
7 years, that's good.
So it's been at Doral for 10 years prior to that. I mean, before that it was quite nomadic, the event, so we were a bit spoilt really with it being at Doral for 10 years on the trot. But yeah, the deal last year was for 7 years, so we may well see a bit of this track for a few years to come, which is no bad thing. It's quite a nice layout, and you know, one of these proper classical old style tracks, but at 7,000 feet of altitude. So you're talking, I mean, some of the interviews with the guys who were playing last year, and typically when you and I are talking about altitude tracks, it's, you know, adding 10% or thereabouts on, but this is even higher than those kind of tracks. So you're talking 15, maybe 20% going onto the length of drives, and you know, it's a massive massive calculation and adjustment needs to be made to your shots when you're playing at that kind of level of elevation. And the point is, it's not consistent between the clubs. You know, your longer clubs, or you're hitting the ball higher, it's potentially going further, closer to the 20%. Some of your other shots maybe get down to 10. So it was interesting listening to Lefty talk about it last year, and he was saying that he enjoys that style of golf because it's very much feeling what you're feeling your way around the course with, you know, visualising shots and you know, working out how close you're going to get with a particular shot and adjusting it for the elevation as well, for the altitude. So
on the same wavelength, because I was picturing the same interview, which was fascinating, with Phil before last year, or I think it was just after the first round. He was going into the details of of a myriad of different shots that he was taking and the calculations they were having to make for the altitude. It was,
yeah.
You know, if it was a fade or a draw or whatever. It was a really interesting interview that he did.
Yeah, it was. I'm trying to think back now, but I think he was talking about when he won at Cherry Hills a long time ago. And, you know, how he enjoyed that at the time. And, you know, he was doing well in his tournament last year. He'd gotten himself into a great position. A lot of luck he had last year and he was
spraying it all over the course, wasn't he? And it was his magical short game that was just saving him.
Yeah, well, he had a few questionable drops as well from under bushes. And, you know, I remember a quote with McIlroy, who was playing with him one of the rounds, and he said, you know, Phil's gone out and shot 68 today, and if I'd have hit the ball anywhere near as bad as that, I'd never, ever, ever got as close to 68 as he's just done today. But, he couldn't quite keep it going for four rounds, Phil, but... Clearly, he got.
Do you want to talk us through the basics of the course? Because it is a classical golf course. It's tree-lined, isn't it? Clearly at altitude. Now, and can you also clarify the greens, what the constitution of the greens are?
Yeah, it's, the course is 7,345 yards, par 71. It's classical tree-lined. It's played at 7,000 feet of altitude. So you're probably adjusting that down to somewhere around 6,500 yards in reality. So, for a modern course, it's super short. So, clearly, it would say 7,345 on the card because that's what it is. But by the time you've added this 10, 15%, 20% number in, depending on the club and the time of day and the heat and all the different variables are in there, it's super short. Kikuyu rough fairways, Poana greens. Now, I've seen quoted bent par, but officially it's Poana. So that's what I'm basing my preview, which will be out tomorrow morning, on, and the calculations that I've done for this particular event.
So we're saying pure Poa, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. That came from the greenkeepers card for the course. Yeah. So I guess over time the track's been around since the 90s.
Go back into my stats for last year then, because I put it down as bent Poa, so I can clearly change that. Which makes more sense, because obviously Dustin Johnson won, and we know he's just a Poana monster anyway, isn't he?
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense from watching it last year and the comments as well from a lot of the players, where it was particularly the track itself. It is tight, it is tree lined. A lot of the challenge actually comes on the greens. The greens are quite undulating, they're multi tiered, but also the putts aren't flat. It's not like, you know, some of these tracks you go to where it's like you're putting on a billiard table, snooker table. It's nothing like that. They're far lumpier than that. They're far, you know, the putts are far snakier than that. So a lot of putts were being missed from 2, 3, 4 feet. A lot more than you'd expect for that kind of level of golfer that's playing. On the flip side, there were an awful lot of chip-ins last year. I mean, an inordinate amount of chip-ins. So, you know, short game around the greens. And they're relatively small greens as well. Clearly is important, but I think it's won and lost on the greens, and they're on the stimp. They're going up to 12-13 on the stimp. You'll see some of the shots that are played, and in some respects they're kind of Augusta like in that you're playing away from the greens and using the console of the greens to bring the ball back down towards the hole. There was one shot that Jordan Spieth played last year where he did exactly that. He wedged it in from 60 yards or thereabouts. Played it against a hill and just ran up to the green and watched it roll into the cup. So a bit of imagination around the greens is required, and being able to handle the Poana greens as well is going to be an important part of this week, I'm sure.
I'm seeing a huge correlation just with the names of the PGA Tour players that were involved last year. You know, DJ, John Rahm. We clearly had Thomas, Branch Snedeker, Phil Mickelson. I mean, that is a massive, massive, massive West Coast correlation. And clearly with a Poana, you can see that, and you can see what that link's all about. So what kind of courses, I mean, to me that shouts, and we know the Kikuyu link, it shouts Torrey Pines. and it also shouts Riviera.
Those are the two that I'm focusing on for most recent form in terms of correlation, because you're absolutely right. Looking at the Kikuyu, looking at the Poana that's in the greens, they're two very clear correlating courses in that respect.
We also had Fleetwood and Fisher bang on it from a European Tour's perspective last year, and if you look at both of those guys, they've both performed well up at Cranshaw Sierra altitude on the European Tour. And I know that Ross Fisher's clearly gone well in the Italian Open, again tree line scorable. So are they again two more courses that from a European Tour perspective you think work very well?
Yeah, Cran's definitely. Again, as you said, it's a mountainside track. It's altitude. It's another short track as well that needs some adjustment in terms of your clubbing. And the
Poa in the greens as well.
Yeah,
right,
small bend Poa greens. So there's an awful lot of correlation there. In terms of style, the track itself, similar to one of the scorable Italian Opens, not the 20, 25 under lark, but this is going to be kind of 15 under there or thereabouts, give or take a shot, I expect. So, they can tuck the pins away a little bit here and make it less scorable. On the Saturday last year, they opened it up a little bit and there were some decent scores. I think a speed shot 63 or thereabouts on the Saturday. So they can flex it around, but style wise, it's more like an Italian Open, Spanish Open type affair that's tree lined and a classical style rather than a it's not a Valderrama in terms of its difficulty and
Have you managed to get a feel for kind of what kind of course conditions we might face? Is it going to be soft or firm or windy?
They've had a mixed few weeks coming in, so there has been some thunderstorms. There's been a few days of rain, but there's also been some sunny days as well. So I expect it will be pretty fair to middling. It won't be particularly soft, but it won't be particularly firm. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. It's going to be a dry 4 days most likely. There's a small chance of a shower each day, but you're talking 10-15%, so not much at all. Temperatures up to around about 75-78 degrees Fahrenheit each day, so it's going to be nice and pleasant, not overly hot, but it's nice for all the players in terms of the temperature at least. And the wind might get up to 8 miles an hour in the afternoons. It's going to be pretty calm, so you'd imagine that's going to encourage a lot of low scoring. And as I say, DJ got to 14 under last year, was the winning score. The conditions weren't particularly any worse. It was just that they can set the course up so it does play a reasonable challenge. And I'll expect it may be that kind of number again, given that it's really quite calm and it could, it's not likely to be particularly firm. I'd expect it's going to be, kind of 14, 15, maybe 16 under wins the...
And the fact they know the course and the greens a bit more.
Yeah, I think the guys that did play it last year will have the advantage from the perspective of understanding how you can be creative around these greens, how you can play away from pins and still get it close. And I guess if you come in there and looking at this for the first time, you're going to be trying to play straight towards pins. You're not going to be trying to be overly creative and flashy with it because you won't understand the nuances of the course. And those guys that have had a few extra rounds, practice rounds as well, on top of that, will be a little bit of an advantage, I think. It was interesting last year because the lead chopped and changed quite a lot. McIlroy was ahead quite early on, you may recall. Actually, he'd been poorly before the event, and everyone was... One of these scenarios where you go, I can't back Rory because he's not very well, and he was too clear at the halfway point, and then kind of fell back. I think he finished seventh or somewhere there or thereabouts. And Justin Thomas was the 54-hole leader going into the final day, and he fell back, eventually finishing the tie for fifth. And DJ got himself four shots ahead at the halfway point in the final round, and nearly gave it all up. Tommy Fleetwood had a chance. DJ made a mess of the final hole to have forced a playoff. So, clearly there's birdies and bogeys out there, there's different ways to get the job done, I think. Again, digging through the stats, it's interesting to see some of the players did play quite an aggressive kind of risk-reward style for this particular event. And you know, they were getting 23, 25 birdies, that kind of number, and 12, 15 bogeys to complement it. And then some players like Fleetwood, far more measured in his approach, fewer birdies, fewer bogeys, and got himself into the mix that way. So I think there's going to be a plenty of different ways to skin the cat this week.
It's one of those rare PGA Tour, I know it's not PGA Tour, but they've clearly sent all the PGA Tour kit out there, because they actually had full strokes gained stats from there last year, didn't they?
Mm. Yeah.
And it looked to me as if it was far more of a tee to green contest than a putting contest. So DJ ranked first for tee to green. Fleetwood, who was second. Ross Fisher and John Rahm were tied for third. They were both 13th tee to green and 6th tee to green. So I think you need to be clearly to have guys that have got a decent approach game at the moment, and who have got a decent scrambling game for when they're missing greens.
Yeah, you look at the top six, and as you say, DJ, Fleetwood, Fisher, Rahm, Peters, Thomas. They're players that you'd kind of categorise in broadly. They're generally longer players, and you know, with the likes of Fleetwood and Fisher, you've got almost metronomic ball strikers, and then you know, the other guys are, you know, on their game. They're fantastic ball strikers. But the real challenge of the course last year was on the greens. It was won and lost on those guys who could handle the pioneer surfaces. So I think you need a combination of the both. You need to be able to get yourself safely there, and then you need to be making those three foot putts for par to begin with, and then trying to build a score by not making too many mistakes. As I say, some of the guys went out there and really attacked it and produced a lot of birdies, a lot of bogeys, and got themselves into the mix that way. Thomas was—I think Thomas led the field for birdies, but he had something like 13 bogeys on the week. It's just, you know, it's different ways to cut it, I think.
Too many, though, ultimately. What do you remember, Barry? Do you remember this contest from last year?
Pass. Very
moving swiftly on.
Very little, yeah.
Who do you? If you were to look at the odds checker market, lads, so you know, let's work through it. If we're talking the top six in the market, that takes us down to Fowler. What kind of views have we got on DJ being favourite, JT? Then we got Rahm, Spieth, Fleetwood, and Fowler.
I think it's really hard to look past Tommy Fleetwood at the moment. Like, just looking at your rolling stats, Steve. For you know, off the tee, greens and regulation, he's just dominating at the moment. Coming off a really good performance, he'll be a little bit annoyed and frustrated that he didn't get himself into that playoff yesterday. He'll feel like he probably let that one slip. So he's kind of going to go out with a little bit of something to prove this week. The one thing I'd noticed from just your little sneak preview, Paul, was interesting stat that the top six in this last year weren't involved on the weekend in the Honda Classic. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So the top four didn't play whatsoever. The next two, the guys who finished fifth and sixth, which were Peters and Thomas, they both missed the cut. So I think there's some logic there. Steve and I were chatting about it earlier, and you know, with a stringent test that is. The PGA National, the challenge of competing, contending, and being involved for 4 days, what's almost like a US Open style tournament, it can grind you down a bit, I think.
And listen to this, guys. This feeds into this beautifully, right? I've gone back to 2012, and I've listed the winner and where they played the previous tournament, where they finished. So Justin Rose, 2012, he was fifth at the Honda Classic the week before. Tiger Woods in 13 was 37th at the Honda Classic. Patrick Reed in 14 was 24th at the Honda Classic. DJ, 2015, he played the Honda Classic but missed the cut. And Adam Scott in 16, he won the Honda Classic. Okay. Now, of course, at that point, they were playing at West Palm Beach Gardens, and they were driving an hour down the coast to Miami for the Blue Monster at Doral. As soon as we get to last year, DJ was first at Riviera, and then we're talking about there being similarities with the Poana Greens, with the tree-lined course. So you, all of a sudden, you've that that link in the chain is broken, and DJ won after winning at Riviera. And you're, as you're saying, the top five from last year didn't play in Florida the week before. So it's very, very, you know, it makes logical sense that that has changed.
I think you've got two aspects there. You've got the fact that it is a tough tournament, and you've got to pick yourself straight up there. And as you said, you're not just travelling down the road. You're going to Mexico, and also switching from Bermuda to Poana Greens.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of adjustment to be made in the space of a couple of days. Now, these guys can do it. They're professionals. Of course they are. But if you're looking for someone who's going to go out there and take a World Golf Championship by the scruff of the neck against the elite, or most of the elite of world golf, then, you know, these factors can come into the equation, I think. And DJ had the week off last week, so DJ's not played. And for me, at the top of the market, if DJ plays his game, he's incredibly difficult to oppose. The question is whether you can take him at, I think, in fact, all the 7-1's gone, so I think you're getting 13-2 now as the best price out there. So, it's a tough call, I guess. Justin Thomas is coming on in off the back of that win last week. Is he going to be up for it straight away to adjust to be in competitive mode straight away at 8-1?
Oh yeah, there's no wriggle room, is there? You know, okay. you're either backing them each way, and that's your only punt for the week, or you're backing them win only. So there's no wriggle room.
No. Yeah, you know, Rahm's there at 12, Spieth we talked about 14. We've talked at length before about his putting on Poana, and I'm as unconvinced as you are that's his best putting surface. Yeah, he's won on it now, but there's far stronger surfaces for him. Fleetwood 18-1. Again, there's not much room for manoeuvre there, but Fleetwood, you know, Tommy's playing so well, wasn't he? It's a difficult one. It's an interesting tournament, actually, because, you know, you can make... I struggle to make a case for a lot of players. You go down the list and you're kind of scrubbing players off one by one by one, to the point at which you're kind of not leaving yourself many that you do fancy are going to do well.
Well, you've got DJ. Clearly, he's a West Coast and Poana monster. I just don't think his game's quite... You can't tell from 1 week to the next with DJ, but...
No.
He hasn't been the best, most prolific greens in regulation of late, last couple of outings. I think Justin Thomas, if this was being played at the Blue Monster, I'd probably be lumping on. But his West Coast results tend to be the Bermuda tracks rather than the Poana tracks, if you see where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
We know that John Rahm has won at Torrey Pines. He's had a few weeks off. Seemed to be getting a little bit towards the end of his tether at the end of the last stretch of tournaments he was playing. Spieth, I'm still not convinced about the putting stroke. Fleetwood's in the form of his life. It's difficult to write off Tommy, in my opinion. And Ricky Fowler, you know, we knew he was going to have a nightmare last week defending, and he did. He could come back firing, but again, he doesn't seem to be hitting greens at the moment, which puts me off Ricky. And then you're down to these kind of mid-price or a little bit juicier kind of prices. Where are you heading with this, Barry? I know that you've gone for some bigger prices, haven't you?
Yeah, I think it's because I can't really decipher between the shorter price guys which one I'd rather be on. So that kind of led me a little bit further out into what I like to think is my wheelhouse, but hasn't been too successful of late. I'm sticking with Duffner again this week. I've made the mistake of backing guys and then when they don't perform, letting them go. And he's still playing quite nicely. This is a real plot your way around ball strikers track from what I can tell and remember from last year, and looking at the course again for this year, his all-round stats are pretty decent, so he's got my money for the week. Another one who caught my eye, Duffner, I picked at 66-1. I took six places rather than five at a longer price.
Just for listeners, Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook have both gone six places of 50 odds this week, as have Betfred and Boyle Sports. Pretty much the rest of them have all gone the standard traditional terms of five places and a quarter of the odds. because it is a short field.
Yeah,
clearly.
Yeah, it's only 65 players, so yeah.
It's nice enough, getting paid nearly 10% of the field. So.
Oh, absolutely. I actually thought Duffner played well last, considering he had quite a long layoff. You know, I think it was a month between tournaments. He played. He was always kind of fringy top 10. Top 12,
yeah,
played well.
Yeah, no, it's pretty decent, and he seems in a pretty good place. Classic Duffner sense of humour as well. Boy, he was hanging out with Ricky Fowler the night before. He was playing with Tiger, and he doesn't have a hat sponsorship at the moment, so he grabbed a hat from Ricky, which was Boss, and kind of joked that, like, you know, what else am I going to wear when I'm playing with Tiger Woods? So, okay. You know, it seems in a good mental place. So that was enough. I'm going to stick with him anyway, because if I didn't and he won, I would, be jumping into the nearest lake. Next for me, also at 66 to 1, six places, which Paddy Power are pretty good, I think, on him, is Ches Reavy. So he is playing pretty damn well. He is quite high in strokes gained tee to green. His putting's not amazing this year, but that's probably because he's hitting so many greens in regulation. So we know we don't need to put the lights out this week. So he's had a couple of seconds recently, and that was enough for me to go. Three and 4 weeks ago, he was second back-to-back weeks. I know this is his first time around here, but if he's striking the ball that well, that's got me very interested at 66 to 1. My last, last at this level of odds is Brandon Grace, who is well capable of winning at altitude. He was second in the South African Open in January, which is played at 5,000 feet, and he won the Nedbank in November, which is played at 4,000 feet. So, I think he's ticking along.
No problem with Kikuyu whatsoever.
No, he's ticking along nicely enough in the form. I mean, he was top 40 in Riviera, so, you know, nothing great, but that course doesn't always suit everybody, so. Gracie's got enough going about him for me to get me interested at that. At, again, 66 to 1, bit of a theme with the bets. And last but not least, I went and tried to find a really long outsider. And looking at the course itself, trying to figure out who might match into that. And
have you gone for what the Americans call the bomb? The bomb tip.
Yeah, well, if that's what it is, yeah, let's go with it.
That's what they call it. I think it's for the Americans, it's anything over about 12 to 1. But yes, anything triple digits, let's call it a bomb.
Yeah.
The bomb.
Does that mean it's very likely to bomb out? Is that
potentially.
It could very well, but particularly juicy, six places, 175 to 1. He is a winner as recent as October. He had a second place in the Trophée Hassan II in April last year, which is a tree-line course, narrowly losing to Dodo Molinari. And in his win in November at the British Masters, he held off Rory McIlroy, shooting a final round 61. He has a lethal short game. He's not in the finest Vettel of form at the moment, but, you know, that's part of the price. So Paul Dunn at 175 to 1. I thought that was quite attractive, and
I think Dunn's a great shout, Barry.
Patriotic bet as well. So see what happens.
Don't forget, he's also won a couple of times around Woburn for the Open qualifying as well.
Ah,
yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of similar kind of links into him for this kind of track.
All in.
For the price, he's missed a couple of cuts on the trot, yeah. But. For the price that you're getting, the chance, you know, I think it's worth taking a chance at 175.
Why not? So. It's good fun anyway.
Yeah.
So that's me done there on my thoughts for players to. Well, that's where my money is this week. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Do you want me to throw my Pennethworth in, and then we'll actually go to the expert?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go on.
I cannot and will not. Yeah, that's quite good. Cannot and will not. Look over Bubba Watson. I can see 40 to 1 on Bubba with Unibet. So we're looking for a guy that can play well around Riviera, tick. Guy that can win on Poana, tick. And a guy, you know, if we're looking at, you know, Scott won in 2016 coming off a first. DJ 2017 coming to this off a first on one. We know that Bubba's done well in the past when he's won at Riviera. I think he went down Riviera, then he went directly to the Blue Monster in 2016 and finished second. So I think Bubba Watson at anything around the 33 to 40 to 1 mark is a cracking bet this week. He played here last year. He was playing dismally with a ball that would, you know, wouldn't deviate. It was going dead straight when we know that he has to get it to do all right, do right angles. And he was quite comfortable. I think he's 38, something like that. I can see him going really well, Bubba. And he's played well at altitude. We know he goes well at Phoenix. He did well at Cherry Hills. I just think Bubba's a decent price and a bit of value there this week. I also think Cantley is a good price at 40 to 1 for a guy that was playing so well at Riviera a few weeks ago. Poana, clearly he's in his makeup. He's a UCLA guy. I think Cantley's got a big win in him soon, and something like this is really good. They asked him in an interview, what would it mean to you if you won in your hometown of Los Angeles? You know, you went here at the UCLA. And his response was, I don't really care where I play, I just want to win all the time. And that's the kind of attitude you want. He hasn't really at a WGC level as yet, or a major level. Well, no, he's very early in his career in terms of, you know, the amount of tournaments he's played. He hasn't been there at the highest level so far. I think he'll be licking his lips this week to get involved, Cantley.
Mm.
I really do. So Cantley and Watson, I've also, and this is going to probably be more from a place perspective, but I think I managed to grab a little bit of 50 to 1 about Tony Finau this afternoon. I've had that as well.
Yeah. You must have read some of my notes, Steve, because on my shortlist I've got Bubba and Finau. I'm looking at Tony Finau, the sixth at Torrey Pines, second Riviera. We're talking about correlations with the Kikuyu and Power. And if you look at that, you know, we talked about the top six from last year here a few minutes ago. And, you know, he's a long enough hitter to sit in that kind of category as well. Third for GIR at Riviera as well was eye-catching.
He's played well at altitude in the past as well, Paul. I said the numbers that got me for his outing at the Genesis, second in approach to green and first in tee to green.
We know he
sometimes putts like Ray Chiles, but this isn't the biggest of putting contests this week. I think a man that can shape the ball both ways, hit tons of greens, as you said, I think, you know, 50 to 1 is a bit of a silly price, really.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's some value. Yeah, I think by the time I'm out tomorrow morning, that will be 45s. But yes, Finau's definitely on my on shortlist, as was Bubba, for much the same reason as you were talking about. I'm still toying about whether to go with Justin Rose at the front end of the market. Would be, if I was going to pick one, that would be the one, I think. A lot of the players here, you look at the top six from last year, and five of them had got a recent enough win to register on their current form. And, you know, back in the last year, Rose was right on fire. He won the last WGC that they played at Shashan, won again in Turkey and Indonesia. So clearly at the time, he was in fantastic form. He was a little bit off when he came back at the start of this year. Abu Dhabi, 22nd, 8th at Torrey Pines. And he's been off since. He's taken a holiday. I think he was quite, you know, vocal that he needed to take a break, took a break with the family, has been practicing hard since. And, I 22, is that good enough for me to take on a player that I think from tee to green will get there? Poana, I think he'll be fine. I don't know. I'm going to have to sleep on that one and decide, I think.
His caddy Fuchs lost his father last week.
So is he not caddying? Or do we?
I couldn't tell you that. I don't know, but he definitely lost his father. I think it was the start of last week.
Okay. Worth looking into.
Yeah, his father lived in Devon, so I know that definitely. That was something I saw on Twitter last week with Fuchs. I follow Fuchs.
Yeah, I think, talking caddies, we looked at the importance of the caddies from
Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson, and all of a sudden Thomas was playing calm again, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you know, how many shots did Eddie Pepperell's caddy save him? Or, you know, a massive part of Eddie getting over the line at the weekend. You know, fair play to Eddie. I didn't have a penny on him, but, you know, delighted to see him win. But yeah, you know, this, it shows you how big an important part of the game having a decent caddy on the bag is. So, yeah, no, that's a good shout, Steve. I'll take a look into that.
Any interest? I think I know your answer. If you were to take one of the top six, who would you take?
DJ.
You will.
I don't think I can take him.
You won't take him because of the price. I know that.
No. If I was going to take one, it would be DJ. But
would you take Fleetwood over Rose 18s to 22s to 1?
I don't think I'd take Fleetwood. The thing I struggle with both of those is that you might end up with a place out of it, and you kind of, depending on how you stake it for the week, you might cover yourself off. But I do struggle to see both of them, or either of them, actually winning, which is the contention. You know, for me, perhaps the better route this week, seeing as I'm struggling, I'm putting the line for a lot of the players at the top, perhaps the better route is to go down to the kind of 40-plus bracket and just pick a handful of those guys. And even a place out of those is going to be paying something, something improved. I mean, one of the players around that price level again that interests me is Matt Fitzpatrick. And we talked about the Crans link earlier.
Yeah.
He won there in September, and he was in very solid form after that. He got 9 consecutive top 20 finishes after that, and then missed the cut in his last outing in Dubai. But again, like the other players, he's coming into this rested. He's not done this Honda Classic, straight over to Mexico route. So his ball striking's been good. His putting has been particularly good, which is an interesting thing to look at with Matt, because when he is putting well, we know how strong he can be from tee to green. He won round Woburn a couple of years ago to get off the mark at the European Tour. So I think there's a lot of correlation here, which would go well for him. And I'm seeing a bit of 60-1 at the moment. 16th last year. And he led the field for driving accuracy around here, which you might expect with that kind of a player. But he's, I think there's a lot to like with Matt for this week.
The other two that interest me that we haven't discussed, one being Phil Mickelson, who I'm seeing John Rhodes at Skybet pricing him at 18-1. And I'm seeing as big as 25-1 with others, including Paddy Power, 6 places each way.
Mm.
And the other one is our Ben Poa or Poana friend, Alex Nguyen, who's playing some outstanding golf right now. But, of course, he's got this Honda Classic appearance overhanging him.
Yeah, it's just... Again, you look down at these prices and relative to the field. If DJ wins, then what are you getting for your 22 or 25 to 1 each way return?
You
alternative is you could pick it in a without DJ market, but then Justin Thomas can win 8 to 1. It's almost like, well, okay, if one of these top guys does go and win, then fair enough. They've clearly played good enough golf to win the golf tournament, but. The bookies have kind of got a grip of both Norrin and Fleetwood at the moment, and the prices are getting a little bit prohibitive, really. Given they're playing fantastic golf, and I wish them both well. I hope one of them does get over the line, one of these big events. And...
Well, the thing is, it's modern day golf betting now, isn't it? Where you've got these big names winning lots of tournaments, and the bookmakers are they're building their book accordingly, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're virtually making it impossible to bet each way on the big names, yeah?
Mm. Yep. You've got to pick one, you can't really go much more than one of those players at the, between the 12 and 20 to 1 bracket at least. Otherwise you can't make yourself a coherent plan for the week. That's the nature of the beast at the moment. In terms of outsiders, Paul Dunn, as Barry said, I think, for a 175-1 shot, it's a great shout. Joost Luiten, who's coming off the back of a win, and my Ben Poa stats, there's not much over on the European Tour, which is on pure power, but in terms of correlating it to Ben Poa, Joost tops my charts. So he clearly loves that format of those types of greens. We know he can be a decent ball striker from tee to green, and he's coming off the back of a win where his putter was absolutely on fire.
Could be a decent top 10, top 20 shout, Joost.
Yeah. Under 125-1. Let's just see if you're getting 6 each way with that.
Because as
Barry was saying, you're covering off. Yeah, you are. Barry was saying, you know, in a field of 65, and without being disrespectful to some of the guys at the bottom, it's probably a field of 55. You're covering off a tenth of the market there with your 6 places, Joost 125-1. There's him and also Brendan Steele, who's
he loves it. Yeah, We're talking West Coast, aren't we? And Brandon Steele's a real ubiquitous West Coast performer.
Yeah, it's, again, looking through some of the numbers that you prepare for the PGA Tour, there's performances on altitude, bent power, classical tracks. We know from tee to green he's very strong. Third at Phoenix one outing out. Won the Safeway, I think it was, at the back end of last year. And actually, you don't associate him with putting because that's not his game, but he's been putting sub 1.7 for the last couple of weeks as well, his last couple of outings. So there's a lot of little indicators there for Steele to have a decent week. And you're getting 90-1 against Steele with six places for the week. So, yeah, in my mind, I'm thinking further, looking down and picking some of these mid to longer price players for the week is more likely to be the strategy I'll go with.
Isn't it getting a bit to that time of year where it gets a little bit tricky because the field is quite deep this week? Actually just nailing it down, because as we've been talking for a while now, we've made cases where you could back quite a lot of players, and in isolation you could go, oh yeah, definitely, push, add them to the bet slip, click bet. Deep fields equals a bit more of a headache when it comes to betting, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if you guys suffer the same problems, but my attention and gaze gets kind of grabbed from many, many different directions because there's so many many quality players there.
End up back in half the field. Yeah, you have to be regimented with it, and the challenge is you cut yourself down to three or four or five players, whatever you end up.
12.
Or 12. Whatever you end up backing, and invariably the ones that you leave out are the ones that start popping up on the first or second day of the leaderboard, and that's when you start when your mood starts to deteriorate when you see that. Yeah,
that's when you enter what we call Reload Friday.
Reload Friday. Yeah.
If it hasn't already happened on Reload Friday.
Yeah. Well, that's when it gets really dark. That's after a few weeks of Reload Fridays. You hit Reload Thursday, and then there's not.
There's no going back from there.
Just using the logic from last year, I mean, Dustin Johnson came here off a win. Tommy Fleetwood had won in Abu Dhabi. John Rahm had won at Torrey Pines. Yeah, Thomas Peters had just finished second at Riviera. They were all in the top five. So going down that route of, guys with immediate form, the likes of Bubba Watson, the likes of Tony Finau, the likes of a Phil Mickelson, a Patrick Cantlay, at those kind of prices when you can't decipher between a DJ, a JT, a John Rahm, because you can't really split the top guys. That logic fills in, because if you're getting an each way place, you're covering your week and a little bit of profit, aren't you, at those prices?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the danger with backing these short price favourites is, as you saw with Ted Potter, this can happen, and you've backed a DJ at 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever the number is that you back him for the tournament, and a Ted Potter pops up and scuppers you for the week. So that's part of the
game. Even last week with JT, 11-12-1, wasn't he the highest player in the field? And it was such a tight tournament with him and List, who was, I think, 90-1.
Yeah, hundreds early doors. Yeah,
and really, List should have won that.
Yeah,
he had the chances to win it. Golf betting isn't as easy as just picking one or two of the top guys and they're guaranteed to win. It doesn't work like that, does it?
No.
Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. So, interesting. It's going to be a good tournament. I can feel it. Who's the one that you wouldn't like to win this week, Barry? Someone that you've looked at and you haven't gone with?
Maybe Xander Schauffele.
Yeah, he's an interesting player, yeah. He's just coming back to form, isn't he?
Yeah, and he was just a little bit shorter than the group of guys that I backed. So, that would bug me a bit. So, how about
he's just, yeah? Well, he's 40-1 with some firms and 60 to others. So there's odds compilers out there that haven't quite got their heads around Schauffele as well.
Yeah, any for you?
Really, I think I'm quite happy with that portfolio. Do we ever see Phil Mickelson winning again, boys?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you watch Pat Mayo and these guys, and they laugh at the fact that, you know, Phil won't ever win again, blah, 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 blah. I don't get that myself. I know that he's not prolific at the moment, but he's certainly becoming more and more consistent with his game at the top level, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
He's not far off, is he?
You don't come fifth, second and sixth in 3 weeks in a row without being close to being, you know, to a win. It's ridiculous to scoff at the fact, you know, at the thought that he won't win again.
No.
Yeah, I definitely think he does.
Well, you say the same thing about Tiger.
100%.
You know, given what we saw last week, when he goes to Bay Hill, what price is it going
to
be for Bay
12
Hill?
12-1 at best, I'd say.
Yeah, it'd be a mad short price.
Yeah.
Will people really be backing him? Absolutely.
He showed some serious signs last week, didn't he, Tiger?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, it would not shock me at all if he wins this year. I wouldn't bat an eyelid at all.
No.
I wasn't a believer when he came back, but I'm starting to believe. I'm seeing signs now with Tiger that he genuinely is going to be right back in the thick of things.
Can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
No, it's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, can you imagine him, Rory, Thomas and Spieth and Johnson all getting in a mix and like in Augusta in a few weeks' time? 38 days, was it 38 days to Augusta? That's close.
The other thing with Bay Hill in a few weeks is it's never the deepest of fields.
No.
So, yeah, he's going to be a very prohibitive price, but very tempting to get on Tiger in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm.
I think we're done, aren't we, chaps? Oh, you never answered the question. Sorry, I jumped in. Who would be your player, Paul? I know you haven't quite selected yours. Would it be Justin Rose and what you were saying?
Well, I'm undecided with Justin. You've almost put me off completely, which probably means he goes and wins now.
I always think he's a bit of a sort of second appearance kind of guy.
Yeah. You know, I get suckered in with Justin probably too regularly, and perhaps that's the time to step back when you kind of recognise that.
You know, when he's hit sort of, he was fifth for greens in regulation the week before, and you know, he finished third or fifth or sixth, that's the week to get on him.
Yeah, I agree.
I looked at his record, and when he's won recently, almost exclusively, there are one or two exceptions, but almost exclusively it's come when he's had a week or two or three's break.
Really? That's interesting.
A lot. Some of his wins have been back-to-back or very close, but there's generally been a week between, before he won the HSBC for the last WGC.
Mm.
He had 3 weeks off before that. So, but then, you know, he'd been playing good golf before that. And
I think he was runner-up in BMW or something.
For me, he needed a break, and perhaps that'll work one or two ways. He'll either come back rusty and it'll be, he's rusty, so he needed to run, or... he's come back firing on all cylinders, and that's because he's rested and raring to go. It's, you know, you could argue to toss both ways, but I suspect I won't go with Rose, and then that'll be the one that comes and bites me on the backside.
Oh, guys, we're full of positivity here.
Positive Mondays.
Yeah. Hopefully we've grabbed one or two there that interest the listeners, and
I think so.
Hopefully increase the balance in our gambling accounts.
Well, thank you for your time, guys. Just for listeners, Paul's WGC Mexico Championship preview will be out Tuesday morning. So will his Tshwane Open preview. There are links placed beneath or in the description here if you're reading this or listening to this on Podbean. Thank you for your time, Barry.
Cheers.
Have yourself a good evening. And to yourself, Paul.
Yeah, have a good evening.
We'll be back next week, and we will see you all again next week. Thanks, guys. Cheers. Bye-bye.